welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Saturday evening, July 25th, and I am here to tell you that tonight's program is going to be one of the best we have had in a well, they're all good, so I hate to even say that, Keith Alexander, but tonight's show is going to be absolutely dynamite, phenomenal. You pick your adjective here. It's going to be a great show this evening. We have got it all for you, and it's all going to be coming to you over the course of the next 3 hours. Welcome, everyone, to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. I'm your host, James Edwards. Over the course of tonight's broadcast, I will be joined by Keith Alexander, who is sitting next to me right now. Bill Rowland and Eddie the Bombardier Miller will be co-hosting, respectively, during the second and third hour. We have a couple of great guests and a lot of hard-hitting hot topics. What's on tap for tonight? If you go to thepoliticalcesspool.org, our official internet headquarters, you will see that we just posted, just moments ago as we sat here at WLRM Studios in Memphis, our flagship station, AM 1380, we posted not 10 minutes before showtime, the Republican Party has a new hero. A new hero in the Republican Party is making all kinds of news because he stood up and he slammed Sonia Sotomayor. Unfortunately, multiculturalism and political correctness are in play once again. This man is, of course, not a European-American because he said the things that if any European-American would have said them, would have got them classified as a racist or worse. Anyway, listen, this is coming up at the top of the second hour. It's hot on the blog at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Very, very interesting story. We're going to be covering that tonight. We will also be telling you that the Southern Poverty Law Center is going after a conservative media personality. And for the first time, it's not me. It is Lou Dobbs. And what are they saying about Lou Dobbs? You'll find that out later in tonight's program. We're going to be talking about a Harvard professor who gets paid a six-figure salary to talk about how evil whites are. Of course, this is an African-American, so to speak, who is getting paid the six-figure salary to talk about the horrors of racism. He got arrested. What's that about? And then a sex scandal here in Memphis, of all places, against this is a sex scandal that has come to light involving a state senator that has had a confrontation with yours truly. So all that and more just to whet your appetite tonight in the cesspool. But first, with all of that, with all of the news that we have to cover, all of the stories that we have to bring to your attention, at least we can turn to the diversion of sports to get away from all of this heinous stuff, right? Or can we? Well, we're going to be finding out the answers to that right now as we discuss sports in black and white with our good friend Don Wassel. Don is a publisher. He is the editor of the Nationalist Times. He is also a sports commentator who administers the fantastic website for all you sports fans, castfootball.com. U.S. And right before we bring Don Wassel on, I want to reintroduce my co-host for the evening, Keith Alexander. Keith, how are you doing tonight, sir?
Doing great. We've been waiting for Don Wassel to be on the show for quite a while now. It's a way to spread out the infection of liberalism in America. You know, it doesn't just affect politics. It doesn't just affect public policy and government. It affects every aspect of our lives. We've had Roger Devlin to show how it affects male-female relationships and marriage and families. And now we've got Don Wassel, who's going to illuminate us on how it affects the sports culture in America.
Whether it's politics, getting into colleges, affirmative action with regards to job placement, even our bread and circus, political correctness is in every nook and cranny of American society. And we're going to find out just how prevalent it is in sports right now. Without further ado, Don Wassel, everyone. Don, how are you doing tonight? Are you with us, Don?
I'm with you, James. How are you doing tonight?
Good to have you. Good to know we have a good connection. I know you're out there in the American Southwest tonight coming to us live. And, Don, you've been on with us once before. It was a greatly received interview, and we ask your forgiveness for not having you back on before now, but we're glad to rectify the problem.
Well, it's great to be with you again, James. I appreciate it.
Well, we've got a lot to ask you about. As Keith mentioned, he has been lobbying to have you back on this show for quite some time now.
Hey, Keith, you're my good friend.
Yeah, that's right. You,
my new best friend.
Friends everywhere, right? It's like that country music song, you've got friends in low places, right?
Well, that's for sure if anybody calls us a friend. But nevertheless, Don, I know Keith has some very insightful and provocative questions to ask you. We are going to be covering the discrimination that occurs and manifests itself against white athletes in all of the four major professional sports leagues here in the United States, as well as some other sports in general. But before we go into specifics, give the listening audience this evening a broad overview or a general overview of what CAST Football is all about and why you felt it necessary to bring forth such a website.
Well, the word caste, C-A-S-T-E, harkens to the caste system in India. Well, of course, India is a country where you're born racially or ethnically, sort of sets your path in life. And in the United States, if you happen to be white, and you want to be an athlete, your path, your opportunities are greatly limited, especially in any sports that blacks show any aptitude at all for. And what we have in sports in this country is affirmative action. We're all familiar with affirmative action in general society and non-sports-related jobs, but in athletics, affirmative action is far more prevalent, and most people don't realize the degree that it exists because they buy into this myth that blacks are far better athletes than whites. I mean, after all, whites, you know, we can't dance, we don't have rhythm, we can't jump, we can't run, et cetera, et cetera. As we tell ourselves all the time, we joke about it, that's sort of the new national pastime among white people in this country is to mock whites, our supposed limitations when it comes to physical ability. And, of course, that's all myth. It's all part of the psychological warfare against whites to believe that they are not good in sports, not good athletically, that white men are not as masculine as black men. And it's a very important subject because the physical is just as important as the mental or the spiritual, and it's all part of healthy outlook and a healthy understanding. And so there was a need for a site that explored this, and there's so much to explore. I think those that appreciate CAST Football and contribute to it, they're addicted in some ways. I mean, it's just an endlessly fascinating subject. It's a very fertile subject, and there's just so much there. And I started it in 2004, and it's sort of taken off from there, and it's doing pretty well. But I think we've made some headway, too. We refer to the masses of white fans as drunk white fans, in a sense, because they love to go to sports events and get drunk and root for these black athletes that they think are better than the white athletes. And it's just a sort of a mocking, sarcastic term as well. But it's a great site, and you know, I'm glad to be on here to talk about it.
Well, we're glad to have you, and I would like to echo your endorsement of your own site there, Don, by saying I believe CAST Football is the definitive source for information about the discrimination that goes on against European American athletes in the sporting world. And again, you know, that at the end of the day is one of the founding tenets of this radio program. We truly want equal opportunity for all and special privileges for none. However, that doesn't seem to be the reality of it in sports and elsewhere in life. You know, we have had Craig Boddicker on, Don, the documentarian who produced a conversation about race, and in it he asked a question about sports, but before doing so he asked if the facts suggested that whites were superior in terms of study skills with regards to IQ and test scores and this, that, and the other, and everybody dismissed that out of hand despite the facts. No, whites were not better students, they were not smarter, so on and so forth. But then he asked the follow-up question: are blacks better athletes? And it was basically, as he mentions in the documentary, one-word answers: yes. Why does that occur, Don?
That's kind of amazing, isn't it? We're all trained, or whites are trained, to say there's absolutely no difference in mental abilities between the races, but almost all whites at the same time will say that blacks are superior athletes. So, in a sense, by saying that, whites are advocating a theory of black supremacy. Blacks are just as intelligent as whites, and they're superior athletes, so they must be the superior race to whites. I mean, that's basically what people are acknowledging.
And of course, despite all the evidence to the contrary that we see in front of our lying eyes every day, I guess.
Well, it all goes back to the egalitarianism and political correctness and people being afraid to admit what's obvious, and also the incredible cognitive dissonance that exists in this country among white people. White people, there's such a gulf between the way they live their lives, the neighborhoods they live in, the people they want to associate with, and then the way they talk and what they claim to believe when it comes to race. It's just a tremendous gulf. It's cognitive dissonance. And I guess that's what we're trying to do, is combat that, because The fact is, the facts are that whites are, far and away, the best athletes in the world.
Well, we're going to find out more about that over the course of the next 45 minutes. We're about to take a break here in the political cesspool. We'll be back after a word from our sponsors. We're talking with Don Wassel, and we're going to ask him how this reverse discrimination presents itself in the NBA, in the boxing world, the NFL, golf, baseball, and more. Whatever your sport is, we're going to be talking about it with Don Wassel of castfootball.us when the political cesspool continues tonight on the Liberty News Radio Network.
Don't go away. There's more political cesspool coming your way right after these messages. Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. James Edwards here with Keith Alexander and our special guest for the first hour, Don Wassel of Cast Football. For all those Don Wassel fans out there, Colonel Reb and the others who post to the Cast Football Forum, the lines are going to be open for this hour. So if you want to call in and ask a question of Don Wassel, the number is 1-866-986-NEWS. And with that being said, Keith Alexander, I turn the interview over to you, sir.
Okay, Don,
yes, sir.
We have had other guests on our show that talk about the visual displacement of whites in television and in the movies, in higher academia, these efforts to shoehorn blacks into elite colleges and universities and professional schools. This same process is going on in American sports, isn't it?
Well, there's no question. And if you look at the two major sports that are black dominated, basketball and football, well, the artificial black dominance, the affirmative action, is not related to just the players now. It's spread to coaches. It's spread to broadcasters. If you turn on the NFL Network, you'll see that roughly about 75% of the on-air personnel are black. This is true all through the networks now. It's majority are so black now, commentators, sideline reporters, broadcasters, et cetera, et cetera. And the same push is being done with coaching. I mean, anything... And if you think about it logically, what does coaching or broadcasting have to do with playing ability? Well, the cultural Marxist logic going on here is that because blacks are supposedly 70% of the players on the field, they should therefore be 70% of the coaches. They should be 70% of the broadcasters. Well, broadcasting,
of course, it would be more valid, we think, to say that since blacks are 13% of the population generally, they should be 13% of the athlete population on these teams.
Doesn't necessarily work that way, does it, Don?
No, not at all. And you look at baseball, where blacks and white liberals are whining all the time about the supposed lack of American blacks. Well, the American blacks are about 9% of Major League Baseball, and that's close to what their population percentage is. Plus, you've got all these Hispanics that are being force-fed into baseball all the time. So blacks are pretty close to what their percentage of the population is, and yet nobody's, the professional liberals, the cultural Marxists, they're not satisfied. They're constantly screaming racism and telling baseball to, you know, set up more, build more academies in the inner cities, to do everything
possible. We have what's called the RBI program. Do you have that out in your neck of the woods? Return baseball to the inner city, RBI?
Well, I know baseball's built academies in a lot of the inner cities, and they've built them all through Central America. So they're building them everywhere, but where the real talent is in baseball, and that's among American whites. 95 to 98% of the talented, the best players in college baseball are white. And yet, if you look at Major League Baseball, the minors now are majority Hispanic. I'll say that again. The minors are majority Hispanic. And again, this is the same force-fed process that we see with blacks in basketball and football. The reality is there's not that many good blacks in baseball, so they're trying to bring in Hispanics to
apparently
to be the majority.
American blacks aren't that interested in baseball, but that doesn't stop the people in charge of Major League Baseball from trying to drag them kicking and screaming onto the baseball diamond. You know, I've joked with James many times before that you see Major League Baseball sponsoring this RBI initiative, supposedly to return baseball to the inner city, but I haven't seen the NFL come up with the RBS program, return basketball to the suburbs.
Well, yeah, and this whole thing that blacks, anything that blacks don't dominate or they're not the majority, that's because they're not interested, is ludicrous. I mean, there's not a sport that pays higher than baseball. If you want to be a professional athlete, the sport you go into is baseball. It's not, you can play for 15 or 20 years if you're good. You can make 10 or $15 million a year. And we know that the blacks aren't lacking when it comes to materialism. So the idea.
Well, here is one problem, though, with that. And let me just say, you know, baseball scholarships to colleges are, you know, most baseball players have to wind up getting a partial scholarship. And one thing we know about blacks in education is they're not going to access higher education in any form unless they get a full ride. So consequently, that's why, in my opinion, so many of them get funneled into football, because they have 80 full scholarships in a Division I football program as opposed to 12 or maybe 11 in a typical college baseball program.
Well, but a lot of baseball players go into the minor leagues right out of high school, too. I mean, if they don't want to go to college, if they have any talent at all, they can certainly be drafted and signed by a major league team and then start off in the minors. It's just the talent pool. If you look, baseball was desegregated in 1947. I mean, it won't be long before we have a national holiday in his honor, and we see his, he's on.
Well, we virtually do on ESPN every, at the beginning of every baseball season, and you were talking about the black commentators. If you look at ESPN, every white commentator is Jewish. You know, Chris Berman, Tony Kornheiser, Steve Levy, you know, Rachel Nichols, Linda Cohn, go on. And, of course, Jews are the most liberal segment of the white population in America, and they make sure that they worship at the shrine of every black athlete, and they turn it into a parable for, the virtue of blacks and the wickedness of whites. Jackie Robinson at the beginning of baseball, Joe Louis, Muhammad Ali, it goes on and on.
Well, I agree with you completely. I mean, I wish I could say I disagree with anything you said, but that's absolutely true. But
just, let me ask you this, Don. I think we would all agree that we would like to see the most talented and gifted athletes given the opportunity to excel and become professionals, just as we would like to see the most gifted students become advanced in academia, just as we would like to see the most qualified job seekers be able to advance up the ranks of any given employment opportunity. If, in fact, and of course I agree with you, that whites should have a bigger share of the pie in these major sporting leagues, what is your theory or opinion, Don, as to why they are not being allowed these positions? Is there an order handed down to bypass them? Are the general managers purposefully not giving these positions to white athletes for fear of repercussion within the media? What is it that's actually stopping them, if they are equally talented or not, more gifted, from being able to go up into the major leagues?
It's just sort of it's an acknowledgement ideology. It's the same belief system that when you turn on your TV and every commercial has to have at least one Negro in it, or has to be multicultural to one degree or another. The whole idea that white men are always shown negatively, that they're put down, that they're treated psychologically and numerically as a minority, an evil minority. This is the same driving force that when it comes to sports, except in sports, blacks have shown a certain ability. Everyone knows that they're fast. They can run in a straight line fast. That's their one great thing when it comes to sports. And I would argue it's their only possible advantage. Every other advantage when it comes to being an athlete, whether mental or physical, goes to the whites. But it's the thing is, James, there's no advantage for a coach to buck the system. This is the system. Any coach that says, "Well, yeah, I'm going to start recruiting white football players," it's amazing that at least half of the good high school stars, when it comes to being a wide receiver, running back, defensive back, et cetera, are white, and yet they do not get recruited into the big college systems. Well, any coach that decides, "Well, I'm going to be colorblind, I'm going to start putting whites in there," well, he's not going to have a job. He's going to be denounced. The fans will be wringing their hands, saying, "What's he doing? You have to have blacks in there." I mean, it's partly a belief system that only blacks are athletes, and it's partly just the ground rules. This is the way it is. It's no different than television has when it comes to TV shows, movies, commercials, etc. what the ground rules are. Everyone knows what they are, and they go along with them if they want to succeed and you know, make the big money and be part of the system.
Well, set tight, gentlemen. We've got to take another commercial break. When we return to the political cesspool after these words from our sponsors, fans, we're going to continue on with Don Wassel, and we're going to have a rapid-fire segment. What's going on in hockey, the NBA, boxing, NFL, and the world of professional golf? We'll find out right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
Continuing on now with Don Wassel of castfootball.us and my co-host Keith Alexander. I'm James Edwards. We're talking sports right now, but we got a lot lined up for you over the course of the second and third hours as well. A mixed bag. You're not going to miss a single second of it. And always remember, ladies and gentlemen, if you are a fan of the Political Cesspool radio program, we certainly need you to support our work by going to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, and we'd hope you would consider supporting us financially. We are a program that exposes the double standards and hypocrisies of the world, and we discuss with candor many of the taboo subjects that the other so-called establishment media deems too hot to handle. We stand in fierce opposition against discrimination, especially discrimination against members of our family, and we're talking about that discrimination now as it presents itself in the world of sports. Don, a quick rapid-fire segment, if you will. I want to ask you a question about boxing. I can remember in my teenage years in the mid-90s, boxing was just, man, it was huge. Everyone was talking about the heavyweight champions. Everyone was talking about the big heavyweight fights, Mike Tyson versus Lennox Lewis, and you had Evander Holyfield. I mean, boxing was big, big news, but it seems as though over the course of this decade, boxing just isn't that in vogue anymore. Boxing isn't that interesting of a sport. Why is boxing not interesting anymore, Don? Can you hear me, Don? Keith, are you still with me? All right, Don, are you with me? Well, I guess it was a rhetorical question. I know we're trying to reconnect the link with Don. Don, are you back with us?
Yeah, I've been here. I've been able to hear you the whole time.
Apparently not. This is what happens with a lot of radio from time to time.
He can hear you, James.
The answer
is
because all of the major
heavyweight
champions now are European Americans, and this is something that Don writes about and blogs about and has discussed quite a bit in his forum over at castfootball.us, and that's CASTEFOOTBALL, castfootball.us. Don, have you reestablished a connection with us yet?
Yeah, actually, can you hear
me? Let's go to Clint in Missouri.
What?
Clint, are you with us? Clint in Missouri.
James, he's Hello, on James. The radio. You can't hear him.
Yes, James, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Clint.
Okay. Just wanted to say, tuned in a little late tonight. Thought I heard a familiar voice, and I thought that sounded like Don on the other end. He sends me quite a few Nationalist Times each month, and I kind of put them all over town, and it's interesting to see the people that pick them up, you know, that would probably never admit in public that they are seeking the truth, but they but there they are doing it, and they read it. And I've had several business owners take interest and let me leave some copies around, stuff like that. The comment I wanted to make doesn't necessarily involve sports. Matter of fact, it doesn't, but I'd just like to comment on something, and that's this, Barack Obama's statement about the Cambridge police saying they acted stupidly. I found it very ironic, given the fact that he got beat up in Ohio, that was just there minding their own business to watch fireworks.
Right.
and the black thugs that beat him up said, it's our world now. By saying nothing, it is my opinion and observation that Barack Obama was giving them a week and a nod to go ahead and continue this practice.
Well, Clint, you bring up an excellent story, and it's actually something that we're going to be talking about during the third hour. If by chance you're still listening during the third hour, I would like to ask you to call back and maybe help me commentate that story, because it is something that we actually have on the agenda this evening, and I'd appreciate that if you have the time.
Oh, I'll have the time, and Don, if you can hear me, great hearing you again, and I'll stay tuned and be listening.
Okay, Clint, thanks. Thanks for everything you do. I appreciate it.
And that's, of course, Clint Lacy, who is an alderman, elected official in Marble Hill, Missouri, and we'll be talking to Clint, hopefully, more during the third hour. Don, good to know that we've reestablished a connection with you out there via satellite. I was asking you about boxing.
Yeah, can you hear me, James?
I hear you loud and clear.
Okay, because I could hear you before. I'm not sure what happened. But at any rate, yeah, we don't hear much about boxing, or we hear a lot of lamenting about the state of boxing, because Europeans are utterly dominating, especially from the middleweight through the heavyweight divisions. At the present time, this may absolutely shock a lot of your listeners, but it's a fact. Whites hold 17 of the 20 title belts from middleweight through heavyweight. I'll say that again. 17 of the 20 champions of the world from middleweight through heavyweight are white men. This is why the media can do nothing but cry about the days of Muhammad Ali, and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you never even see a boxing match on television anymore. I can remember again, and I don't want to spend too much time on this because we have a lot of ground to cover and only a little bit of time remaining this hour. But, I mean, Don, you hit it on the head. 17 out of 20 of the top fighters are European-American. And
well, they're just Europeans. I mean, white Americans are held back because of the caste system, but it's the Eastern Europeans in particular that are hungry and have burst through, and they're dominating boxing right now. They're from Russia and Ukraine for the most part.
Well, thank you for putting out the clarification.
But,
I mean, you know,
do you
remember how big it was when you had the Tysons and the Lennox Lewises and the Evander Holyfields winning fights? I mean, it was just madness.
I mean, a lot of them were. I mean, of course, Mike Tyson still gets a lot of good press. The guy is nothing but criminal scum. I mean, the media, if it was any sense of fairness at all, would rejoice at there's high-quality men like the Klitschko brothers dominating boxing. The Klitschkos can speak multiple languages. The one has a Ph.D. I mean, they're perfect role models, and yet they're totally downplayed because they're white. There's no other reason for it.
Well, I want to ask you, segueing on to golf very quickly. Golf is an interesting sport, if you could call it a sport. I don't know if I would necessarily say that's a sport, but either way, we won't digress. Golf is a sport dominated by whites, I guess you could say. Most of the golfers are white anyway. But you only hear about one golfer. If you ask the man on the street to name the first golfer who comes to mind, who is it, Don, and why?
Well, the thing is, I mean, golf is a sport because it takes a lot of hand-eye coordination, and it takes a lot of planning and judgment and things like that. And the fact is, hand-eye coordination is a huge advantage that whites have. I know we're going rapid-fire here, but, of course, you're looking for the man I call the future president of the world. That's Tiger Woods. And he, of course, is worshipped, literally worshipped by the white media in this country. It's absolutely disgusting. But if anyone, and the thing is, too, a lot of people think, well, because Tiger Woods is the best golfer, that blacks must be good at golf. Well, the fact is, Tiger Woods is only one quarter black. He, of the top 1,000 male and female golfers in the world, he is the only black out of 1,000. And the whole argument, well, blacks just aren't interested, otherwise they dominate. Well, blacks love golf. If you play golf, you'll see the blacks are disproportionately out there on golf courses. They try real hard to play, but unfortunately for them, the average black golfer is much closer to Charles Barkley than he is to Tiger Woods.
Well, Tiger Woods is getting the kind of press that truly is reserved for kings of the world. And is it because, Don, that every time he takes to the green, he wins every championship, he never loses? That's why he's getting all this press, because he's just unbeatable?
Well, he wins about one out of four times, which is exceptional. But the fact is, there's a tennis player named Roger Federer. Roger Federer is arguably the best tennis player ever. There's a lot of parallels between his career and Tiger Woods. Roger Federer has won now 15 majors in tennis. Tiger Woods has won 14 majors in golf. And yet, Roger Federer just recently was on Sports Illustrated cover for the first time in his career. Now, all you got to do is turn on a TV or look at a magazine, and the odds are about 1 in 3, you're going to see Tiger Woods. I mean, the publicity disparity is incredible. And again, it's racially based. Some people would say, well, Tiger's American, but that's a small part of it. But the fact is, again, if we had a black tennis player, like, well, of course, the Williams sisters, there's another example. They're the only two really good tennis players that there are. There's a couple decent male players that are black, but 99.8% of the best tennis players and golf players, and for that matter, most sports that are played competitively, are white. And yet people still have this incredible misconception that whites are somehow inferior athletes to blacks.
Let me ask you a quick question about hockey.
Now, hockey seems to be one of the four major sports leagues in America. That would be the NHL, the MLB, NFL, and NBA. That isn't or hasn't been successfully integrated. And when I say integrated, I mean it's not 90% non-white. We got 55 seconds to break, Don. How did the biblical plague pass over the NHL?
Well, it's not for lack of trying. Again, I guess, you know, those magnificent athletes apparently don't have any interest in hockey. But in reality, there's only one really good black player in the entire NHL. He's a Canadian. His name's Jerome Iginla. Like Tiger Woods, he is a mulatto. Iginla's half white. He's half black. And yet again, he gets a disproportionate amount of publicity. He's a good guy. He hasn't committed any felonies, which is always exceptional when it comes to a black athlete. So he gets endless good press. But again, in a league of roughly 700 or 800 players, there's only 3 or 4 half-decent blacks. Now, why is that? It's not lack of opportunity. It's just because they aren't very good at the skills required to play hockey at the highest level.
Well, we're going to continue on with Don Wassel for one more segment talking about discrimination against European Americans in sports. Keith Alexander will have some final thoughts as well right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We'll return.
Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
A few more minutes left tonight with Don Wassel, the publisher and sports commentator. Keith Alexander is co-hosting with me, and still a lot on Keith's plate. Keith, take it away.
Well, Don, you were talking earlier about football and basketball, and, you know, yeah, I don't know that the sports establishment would grudgingly admit this, but I think most spectators would, that whites seem to predominate in sports like golf and tennis and some others. But then you point out very articulately on your website that, for example, in high school football, whenever a white powerhouse football team encounters a black powerhouse, most of the time the white team winds up winning. You have an article about right. Arkansas State football, for example, and you go through all the divisions of high school football in Arkansas and show how the white team routinely beats the black team. I've noticed that here in Memphis.
All over the country it happens that way, yes.
And on the other hand, only one and maybe two white players from those powerhouse teams get Division I scholarships. Meanwhile, on the black so-called powerhouse teams, the losers, probably 7 to 10 will get Division I scholarships.
Well, not only that, the white kids, if they're playing wide receiver or running back or certain positions on defense, even if they break state records, they are not going to be recruited by the major programs. That's just a fact. If they're all-state running back, they might be turned into a safety or a fullback or a linebacker, et cetera. The fact is, white receivers, running backs, and cornerbacks, and safeties, and defensive tackles, they rarely get scholarships, period, no matter how much they dominate in high school.
I've wondered why that is. You know, I think in one sense, maybe black athletes are more easily managed by these coaches because, quite frankly, if they don't play football, they've got no other options. A white kid would go, and if the coach turns out to be too much of a tyrant, says, well, forget you, I'm going to go to college, dad will pick up the bill, and I'll join the fraternity or something. But, you know, the blacks basically have to, you know, that's their one ticket. But, you know, you were talking about how you can't buck the system if you're a coach. We're trying to figure out why coaches favor black athletes, white coaches favor black athletes. I can think of two instances where coaches, for example, benched a black quarterback and put in a white quarterback, and his team just sat down on him. Jackie Sherrill's last year or two at Mississippi State, and Chuck Stobart in the early 80s at the University of Memphis.
Well, you know, the fact is that, I'm sure that happens all the time. There's a sense of entitlement, and this is the way it is among the players. It affects morale if all of a sudden there's a white running back or maybe a white quarterback that they don't want to see in there. It affects locker room morale. Coaches know this. Players know this. This is why the system never deviates. If you look at the percentage, racial percentage in the NFL, year after year, it never deviates more than one percentage or point or so. You never, there's no running backs that are allowed to start ever for the last quarter century, except when all the five or six blacks in front of them all get injured. There's no white cornerbacks year after year. You would think, you know from the law of averages, every now and then there would be a blip or a deviation where there would be an influx of whites at certain positions, even if blacks normally dominate them, but it never happens. It never changes year after year, decade after decade. It's a systematic discrimination that goes on relentlessly.
Blacks will mutiny if you, for example, replace a black quarterback with a white quarterback in some colleges and whatnot. Whites would never do that. And the reason is blacks have this exaggerated sense of racial solidarity among themselves, and whites have virtually none. It's part of this larger cultural malaise that we all notice.
Well, the thing is, we're brought up by cultural Marxism that whites have no positive traits. They have no positive qualities as a race, and anyone that advocates that they do is going to get hammered. I mean, this is what coaches face, too, when it comes to sports. This is the way it is. Whites can only be acknowledged as whites in negative ways. That's rule number one in the United States today.
And, you know, we were talking about the larger cultural implications. This is just one aspect of the displacement of whites from American society. And we were talking about cultural Marxism. Well, of course, one of the goals of cultural Marxism is to induce what's called cultural pessimism. And they're obviously doing a great job of this with white youngsters. You have so many white kids that decide, I'm not going to go out for the basketball team or I'm not going to go out for the football team because the coaches don't value my services. Why, you know, butt my head against the wall, I'll go out for the tennis team or I'll go out for the golf team or I'll go out for the cross-country team or something like this.
Well, you know, you think back to the Brown versus Board of Education, and one of the things that we still hear about 55 years later, one of the deciding factors was some supposed study where black kids were, white dolls and black dolls were placed in front of them, and they were asked to pick which one they would rather have. And a fair amount of the black kids picked white dolls. Well, boo-hoo-hoo. Well, here we are for the last, who knows how long, but you take a poll or a study of white kids today, and who their role models are, and who the posters they have on their wall, what heroes. Well, almost every time it's going to be black, and yet nobody cares in the system and the power structure that whites don't have role models to look up to. And again, this is all part of the hypocrisy, the double standards, and of course, those exist because it's an all-out war, demographic and psychological warfare against whites.
Well, the fact that these white kids have these black athlete posters in their rooms is a perfect testament to the success of the cultural pessimism that the cultural Marxists in charge of our society have managed to inflict upon white kids. They do not see other whites as role models. You know, I guarantee you, no black would have been caught dead with a Larry Bird poster in his room back in the 80s.
Well, and their parents are just as bad. I mean, you look at the stadiums on Saturday in the fall, especially in the South. I'm not picking on the South, but that's where it's most pronounced. The SEC is the citadel of the caste system. You've got 70, 80,000 rabid white fans packing these stadiums all through the Southeast and cheering for teams that are 90% black, and they never see a white running back. They never see a white, maybe once in a blue moon, they'll see a white receiver. The defenses are all black. More and more of the offensive lines are all black. So, I mean, it's hard to blame the kids when their parents are just as bad.
And, Don, you better believe it. Those fans are much more loyal to that team than they are to their own children and their own ancestors.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, it's funny you mention this because just this week I got a hold of a copy, a DVD, of the 1969 Ole Miss-Alabama game Alabama won 33-32. And what a refreshing sight it was to see all these white players. And the main thing, even though some were a bit smaller, the thing that really stuck out in my mind was, first of all, how physically fit and slim most of the linemen were and how crisp the blocking was compared to what it is today.
most of the fact is the majority of the blacks in the NFL are obese, literally obese. And here's another thing too. In the 60s and 70s and into the 80s, the NFL was thoroughly integrated. There was blacks and whites. For 25, 30 years, that league was integrated, and you still had white running backs, you still had white receivers, you still had whites playing defense. And all of a sudden, in the mid-80s, it stopped. And there hasn't been whites basically allowed, and that's the right word to use, for 25 years at these positions. And yet fans that are old enough to remember what it was like, they just take it in stride. They just believe it because the propaganda is so intense, as the propaganda always is when it's in this culture. It's relentless and no deviations allowed, and it's a shame.
Well, it's cultural pessimism, like I said, Don. What they're doing is, you know, they've just given up hope of changing things, so they can either just turn off their TV sets, which I wish they would do, and stop buying season tickets, or else they just go out there and, you know, try to focus on, you know, the white quarterback or the white kicker or the occasional white lineman. Or else they just, you know, the really brainwashed ones just, you know, absolutely fall in love with these black athletes. But
believe me, Keith, if they could have the league, the NFL, it's not for lack of trying that they're still mostly white quarterbacks. If the blacks were even half decent at quarterback, most of the quarterbacks would be black now, too.
Well, the good news is, guys, Michael Vick is out of jail, so.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, we can all you know, wait with bated breath for his return.
Yeah, he's back, Young. And all the Bulldogs better beware.
Well, you know, there's another thing, too, that I wanted to point out. You know, American sports, I think, are kind of like the Galapagos Islands of sports in the world. We were so remote that we developed these different sports, and the American sports that are considered the, you know, the king sports right now, basketball and football, basically reward biological abnormality rather than athleticism. You know, it's not an athletic achievement to weigh 350 pounds like some of these linemen do, and it's likewise not an athletic achievement to be 7 feet tall. And there seems to be more of these, you know, biological anomalies in the black community. Right?
Well, you know, these 350-pound linemen that the coaches and the media salivate over, it's like putting a 400-pound goalie in hockey, just letting him fill the whole net.
Don,
calling him an athlete.
Don,
yeah, right.
Keith,
no athleticism at all.
I hate to cut this short. Keith, I want to say I really appreciate your depth and analysis and what you've brought to this interview tonight. We are almost flat out of time. If we had kept Don for the entire 3 hours, we wouldn't have really gone past the tip of the iceberg. But I encourage everyone to check out Don Wassel's fabulous website, castfootball.us. And, Don, we got to have you back sooner rather than later. Keith, thank you, my friend. We'll talk to you next week. Much more to come tonight in the second and third hours as the political cesspool rolls on this evening, Saturday, July 25th. Don
now.
Wassel, everybody, and Keith Alexander.
Stay tuned. Hour number two of the political cesspool comes your way right after these messages.
Harv leaped to his feet and says, something's got a hold on me. Yow! The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleeping little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon, and Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room, all the way down to the A.